You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
On the right side of every Jewish doorpost is nailed a small wooden, metal, stone, or ceramic case with a small piece of parchment rolled up inside. Together, they're called a mezuzah, which means parchment. And on that parchment is written today's passage from Deuteronomy, one of the definitive statements of Jewish identity. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. This passage is called the Shema because Shema literally means hear or listen up. The great Jewish teacher Maimonides wrote, by the commandment of the mezuzah, one is reminded when entering or departing of God's unity and is stirred into love for God. So even as simple a task as coming in or going out of the house becomes a reminder of the presence of the divine. And all that may sound a bit strange until you consider the habit among some Christians of crossing themselves. Same idea. Tertullian says, whatever we find ourselves doing, we mark ourselves with the sign of the cross. As far as the passage itself is concerned, Deuteronomy is the last book of what's called the Pentateuch, literally the five books. Traditionally, wink, wink, written by Moses. Most of Deuteronomy is five sermons, supposedly delivered by Moses as a kind of State of the Union address, reviewing the previous 40 years of wandering in the wilderness and anticipating the people's arrival in the Promised Land. This passage is also important to Christians because when Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He quotes this passage, love God with all your heart, soul, and strength. Once again, affirming that what Jesus was preaching was not some heretofore unimagined wisdom, but the very heart of the Judaism that was handed down to him.
Our words of wisdom are from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9.
Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might.
Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children and talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise.
Bind them as a sign on your hand. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead and write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
A priest and a rabbi were discussing theology when the priest asked, Rabbi, don't you think the difference between us is clear? Christianity is about love, turning the other cheek, loving your enemies, while Judaism is about law, keeping rules and commandments. The rabbi said, consider a parent who genuinely loves their child. Does that love mean they just let the child do whatever they want? Of course not, said the priest. They set boundaries for their safety and well-being. Exactly, said the rabbi. And that's what Torah is, a guide, not to burden us, but to motivate and show us what living a life of justice and loving kindness looks like. Friends, Christians have been lied to, but we're not alone. Jews have been lied to as well. Judaism is not what you think it is. It's not even what many Jews think it is. Most of us, Jew and Christian, have been conditioned to believe that The God of the New Testament is a God of love and mercy and grace, while the God of the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, is angry and vindictive and bloodthirsty. We've all heard it 1,000 times. Christianity is about love, but Judaism is about the law. And this long-standing delusion is why Rabbi Shai Held has written his new book and why he's given it a title some would consider provocative. Judaism is about love. Both Jews and Christians alike need to be deprogrammed and reminded that at its core, the Jewish tradition tells the story of a God of love who creates us out of love and in turn enjoins us to live lives of love. Jews are commanded to love God, their neighbor, the stranger, and all of humanity, and are taught that the highest achievement of the human being is to live with compassion. Rabbi Held writes, "Jewish texts push us to love more deeply, help us understand what genuine intimacy requires of us, and pushes us to love our neighbors, to want them to flourish, and to contribute in meaningful ways to making that happen. Jewish texts prod us to love the stranger, the outsider, who is often ignored or cast out or even demonized. They invite us to cultivate compassion so we can be present with others when they are hurting and suffering." In fact, Rabbi Aaron Kotler writes, "The whole purpose of creation is love, in Hebrew, chesed, and a person is obligated to conduct themselves accordingly." So, love becomes the precursor to any other pursuit, be it justice, compassion, or any other virtue. But what exactly is this love? Rabbi Held lays out his understanding of love as, one, the gift that it is, two, the expectation of a response, and three, the struggle to love in the real world. First off, I think I'm safe in saying that theoretically, Judaism is more psychologically well-adjusted than Christianity. Why? Because conventional Christianity is built on the belief that because an ancient mythological ancestor disobeyed God, original sin, we are all, by virtue of being born human, damned to suffer an eternity in hell. However, because a sinless Jesus, who somehow is also God, died on the cross, the bloodlust of the God who is somehow not the same God as Jesus is satiated, and we are now conditionally loved. Conditionally because we have to believe in this arrangement in order to be loved. Unless you're a Calvinist who is predestined to burn in hell, and then you're just plain out of luck. Needless to say, many Christians have to deal with a lot of residual guilt and walking on a lot of eggshells around God because you never really know when God is going to rescind the whole love thing, like if you're gay or left-handed or something. So a lot of Christianity veers into territory that is remarkably similar to a toxic, abusive parent vibe. Judaism, on the other hand, has never heard of original sin. In fact, as Rabbi Held points out, Jews are loved by God not for anything they've done, believed, or accomplished. Jews are loved simply because they are created in God's image. God's love is not something that is earned, but is something Jews strive to live up to. That's one of the reasons Jews recite today's passage, the Shema, twice a day. It's not only a reminder of God's love, but a call to live up to that love. It's both an invitation and an expectation. Jews are created with love, for love. And not only that, our distinctive, unique, never-to-be-repeated creations with ultimate worth. And that's not to say Jews don't all have shortcomings. Instead, this way of thinking reminds each Jew that they are created with particular gifts to contribute to making the world a better place. The challenge, then, is to accept that challenge. So traditionally, Jews read the story of Jonah on Yom Kippur as a reminder to not be like Jonah. Most Christians don't read past the Jonah being up on the beach part. But the whole story, from beginning to end, is about Jonah's reluctance and avoidance, kicking and screaming in resistance to his call. But Jews are reminded that being created in God's image entails becoming God's agent and emissary in the world. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, "The fact that someone lives in a particular time, at a particular place, and not in some other time, under different circumstances, can only be understood if we accept the idea of the human being having a distinctive mission. Providence knows how and where each individual, with her capacities and weaknesses, can best fulfill her mission, and we are created accordingly. We are not free to accept or decline our mission. We are not free to walk away. This is the lesson of Jonah. Although we have the ability to turn away, religiously speaking, we do not have the right to turn away. Because we are loved, we are obligated to love in return. So, once Jews understand that everything we are and everything we have is a gift, the world is a gift, life is a gift, within a gift, within a gift, the challenge is Rabbi Held's second point, that we be grateful enough to pass it on to others. Gratitude becomes the bridge between the realization of how much we've been given and the commitment to being givers ourselves. We are not just beneficiaries of God's gifts, we are intermediaries who are obliged to keep God's gifts in circulation. But it's not all sweetness and light. Life may be a gift, yes, but sometimes life can be unbearably painful. Rabbi Held believes that the authentic spiritual life requires us to live with our eyes open and refuse to lie about what we see. Side by side with gratitude lives protest, a deep and unabashed conviction that the world as it is a very far cry from the world as it should be, and a demand that the gap between them begin to be closed. Rabbi Held reminds us of the stories of Abraham, who argued with God to not destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and Moses, who on multiple occasions spoke up about injustice and stepped into conflicts in order to protect someone being mistreated. He talks about the honesty of Job, who speaks the truth to God, condemning God's own cruelty. How the Psalms express anger, frustration, and disappointment with God, like you would in any human relationship. And how the prophet Nathan had the guts to confront King David for murdering Bathsheba's husband so he could have her for himself. Look, sometimes love means speaking up. When faced with injustice or oppression or interpersonal brutality, it is almost always easier to keep quiet. But in Jewish ethics, there is no such thing as an innocent bystander. Rabbi Menachem Hamieri says, If we don't protest an injustice, it is as if we ourselves committed it. And this is where we overlap with convictions that sound very Jesus-y. Like how sometimes there is no greater expression of love than when we side with the oppressed and resist injustice. Anger in the face of injustice can actually be a manifestation of deep love. John Keese writes that our love for the world is measured by the anger we express in response to the injustice that happens within it, the outrage we feel at the occurrence of systemic murder or the subjection of individuals to inhumane conditions, the indignation we feel at the moral detachment of perpetrators who participate in such crimes, or the complicity of wider society. A life animated by love requires us to not only respond to the sufferings of the oppressed, but to work to bring an end to their oppression. And that means acknowledging that love is not only expressed in kindness, compassion, and generosity, but also in indignation, anger, protest, and yes, politics. It also means getting off our high horse as Christians, thinking that we've got some sort of monopoly on love. We most certainly do not. Some Christians are happy to just sit around waiting for the world to end, while Judaism asks Jews to love the world so deeply that they are prepared to fight for it. And yet, many evangelical and fundamentalist Christians cheer on the brokenness of the world, believing that once the pain and suffering gets to be unbearable, that God is going to swoop in, take up all the real Christians to safety, kill all the Jews and wrong-thinking Christians, and destroy the world to make way for something new. No! If you believe any portion of that, you are no friend of Jesus. You are part of a dangerous, misguided cult. As I understand Jesus' message, being a follower is about working to make the kingdom of God real in the here and now. The genuine love Jesus advocated is about not giving in to the cultural norms that maintain an unjust status quo. And by virtually identical means, that's what Judaism is about too. Friends, there are so many things that Christians get wrong about Judaism. But I hope that when you understand how integral love is to being a Jew, you'll begin to see how similar our core values are. Remember, Jesus was a good Jewish boy. And if you can separate all the dogma and doctrine that has been piled onto him by the church over the centuries, you're going to find that the values Rabbi Held is talking about, compassion, gratitude, generosity, justice, advocacy for the oppressed, are in exact alignment with what Jesus of Nazareth taught his followers. In short, Judaism is about love and all the complicated expectations that come with efforts to show that love in such a screwed up, complicated, and bewildering world. And here's one more thing we Christians can learn from our Jewish brothers and sisters. While we Christians are indoctrinated into believing that we're horrible sinners from birth, and without Jesus' sacrifice, God would just as well see us burning in hell, Rabbi Irving Greenberg reminds us that all human beings are endowed with three intrinsic dignities: infinite worth, equality, and uniqueness. In other words, we're not horrible sinners, but abundantly blessed from birth. However, being subject to human nature, we're still prone to screwing things up. Nevertheless, Rabbi Held contends that no matter what, we remain capable of choosing the good, of choosing love. It is a choice we make and have to be reminded to make. In that way, Rabbi Leo Bake says that Judaism is stubbornly possibilistic. There's no guarantee that we will choose the good, but there's always the possibility we can choose the good. And when choosing the good, Judaism, and sometimes even Christianity, can be the catalyst of any number of virtues: compassion, honesty, integrity, and a passion for justice. And so, despite what you may have heard otherwise, above all else, remember, Judaism is about love. Be well.
Hey, and don't forget, if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks, Brianna.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.